My name is Bill Neville with the Entrust Group. We appreciate you joining our webinar today. And I'm going to go ahead and get started. My colleague Andrew is going to be controlling the slides here. But what we're going to be talking about today, we're going to be going over some dates that you need to know in 2024 regarding retirement accounts and tax filing and things like that. And then we're going to go over the SECURE Act. And some of the changes, the main changes associated with that. I'm going to take myself off camera here, and then I'll come back on at the Q&A session. So we do have a question and answer session at the very end, so feel free to type in any questions that you have, and I'll try and answer them at the end as best I can. Note, I'm not a CPA. I'm not a tax expert. And a lot of these dates are, you know, information that that we've looked up and provided. But if you want to get maybe a little detailed, I'll try and answer as best I can. But there's a good chance that I'm going to refer you to a CPA to have a CPA answer those questions. So that's basically what we're saying here. We don't provide any investment advice or endorse any particular investments. And we're not CPAs. We're not attorneys. I'm not a CPA or attorney. So this is for educational information only, and we're encouraging you to, before investing, seek the counsel of attorneys, financial advisors, and particularly when it comes to tax-related information, you're going to want to talk to a CPA before you rely on us for any. Okay, again, I'm going to take myself off camera here, and then we're going to keep going forward. So this is what we're going to do, a real quick overview about Entrust. Then we're going to go over some dates and deadlines that you should know for 2024. Some of the new limits and cost of living adjustments that are in effect in 2024. And then some of the tax law changes associated with the SECURE Act, or not just tax law, but various rules changes associated with the SECURE Act. And then, again, as I mentioned, Q&A time. Feel free to type your question in the Q&A box. And I'll go over every one of them, even if my answer is I don't know the answer to that. I'll at least. Andrew, next page. There we go. That's me. I've been with Entrust now coming up on 13 years. And my role as business development manager, I educate people on how they can use their retirement accounts to invest in non-traditional investments. Entrust has been in business since 1981, so over 40 years. We currently have about $5 billion in assets. We've had over 45,000 different account holders. And one of the ways that we differentiate ourselves from our competitors is that we provide a single point of contact. So you don't have just an 800 number to call if you have questions or need assistance. You have me or one of my colleagues, and we each have an associate as your point of contact, that you'll have our direct phone number, our direct email, if you have any questions or need assistance. We are custodians and record keeper, or what it says there, self-directed IRA administrators. The majority of our company that is qualified for it has their certified IRA services professional degree. We have nationwide offices. So we have business development managers in different regions of the country. We're headquartered in Oakland, California. We do in-person events as well as these webinars. We are part of a national continuing education program that provides credits for certain types of professional backgrounds. And we have an IRA Academy, an annual IRA Academy, where we train people in our industry on what they need to do to pass the certified IRA services professional. All right, let's jump into this. So let's start with the various dates and deadlines. We're going to go in order within the year, so starting off with January. So the first thing that we're required to put out is a fair market valuation statement and a required minimum distribution statement and a form 1099-R. Those are all due on January 31st. So let's go over each one of those individually. Go ahead to the next screen, Andrew. So the fair market valuation statement, all retirement account custodians are required to provide a fair market valuation to their account holders by January 31st of the following year. Now, for most people who have retirement accounts with a bank or brokerage firm, there's nothing they need to do because that fair market valuation is provided through the market. But for self-directed custodians like us who hold a lot of non-traditional assets like real estate, private equity, et cetera, we require our account holders to update us with the fair market valuation. And so we give essentially you, the account holder, until January 31st to update us with the fair market valuation of any assets in your account. And then that's what we're going to report to the IRS. And so it's based on the value of any assets that you hold as of the end of the previous year. And that gets reported on a Form 5498. This is used for required minimum distribution calculation. So if you're over age 72 or age 73, then it's important to have an updated fair market valuation. And as the last bullet point says, the amount may come from the IRA holder. Custodians may use alternatives besides an appraisal. And some value may be difficult to acquire promptly, like partnerships and LLCs. If you're invested in any of those, it's best to reach out to that partnership or LLC to find out the valuation. So the required minimum distribution statement is required for custodians under the IRS Notice 2002-27. We must provide RMD statements to IRA holders by January 31st of the year an RMD is due. And this assists in notifying IRA holders that they have an IRA RMD due that year. So we will notify any of our clients who are subject to an RMD that they are required to take a required minimum distribution. There's no rule that says that you have to take your RMD from that specific account. So what I mean by that is if you have more than one IRA, if you have one with us and let's say with a brokerage firm, you can take your entire RMD from that brokerage firm, but the value of your account with us still goes into calculating what RMD you have to take. Finally, the Form 1099-R, this reports distributions and other taxable events from retirement plans. It is sent out by your IRA custodian by January 1st, 31st of the following year. So we will send out all 1099-Rs by the end of this year or the end of this month. Not all reportable distributions are taxable, like recharacterizations or direct rollovers, which are listed on a 1099-R but are not taxable. This does not need to be filed with your tax return unless there is an amount on box 4 federal income tax withheld. And we have a little picture of it there. So if you get this form and that box is checked, then you need to file this form along with your tax return. So the next deadline, March 15th, this is for S corporations and partnerships. And we mention the IRS publications there, 4951 and 541. So SEP IRA, and individual 401k plan establishments and contributions deadline for S-Corps and partnerships. So this is the deadline for establishment of either a SEP IRA or an individual 401k for S-Corporations and partnerships. And again, you can see IRS publication 560 for more about that. April 1st, this is the deadline for traditional IRA, SEP IRA, simple IRAs, and individual 401k plan participants who turned 73 in 2023 and delayed the distribution of their RMD to take their first RMD. So if you turned 73 years old in 2023, you have to take your RMD by April 1st. And if you don't, then you're subject to penalties associated with that. April 15th, this is an individual tax return due date. This is also the deadline to make an IRA contribution that does not include extensions. This is also the 15th, is the deadline to establish and contribute to SEP or individual 401k plans for sole proprietors or C corporations. Again, see IRS publication 560. And this is the same deadline to recharacterize a current year contribution as well as execute a corrective distribution of an ineligible IRA contribution. So if you made an IRA contribution in 2023 and it was incorrect, then you have until April 15th to correct that or recharacterize that. April 30th is the deadline for IRA custodians and trustees to mail IRS Form 5498 ESA to IRA holders. So ESA is it stands for Educational Savings Account or Coverdell Education Savings Account. So that's the deadline for companies like the Entrust Group to mail that Form 5498 for those who have a Coverdell Educational Savings Account. May 31st. Now, this is the deadline for us to mail the Form 5498 and 5498 SA to IRA holders, May 31st. So the previous date was for the 5498 for Coverdell ESAs. This is for IRA holders and health savings account plans. And I'm going to read what it says there. While IRS Form 5498 SA covers health savings account plans, the 5498 reports IRA contributions, rollovers, Roth IRA conversions, and required minimum distributions to the IRS. Again, May 31st is when we, Entrust, and our other companies in our space, in the retirement account space, send out the Form 5498 to the IRS. This is also the deadline, May 31st, for IRA holders to remove excess educational savings account contributions and earnings for 2023. To remove excess contributions, request a withdrawal from your financial institution. So if you made an excess contribution, you would need, if you have an account with Entrust, you would need to reach out to us by May 31st for the 2023 excess contribution and earnings. Excuse me. September 16th, this is the deadline for S corporations and partnerships that filed for a tax return extension for 2023 to make contributions. The same deadline applies to employers that filed for a tax return extension, establishing SEP and individual 401k plans for the tax year 2023, right? So this is if you filed extensions for establishing a SEP or a 401k. Finally, this is the deadline for S corporations and partnerships that filed for a tax return extension to make simple plan employer contributions. October 1st, this is the deadline for existing businesses to establish a new simple plan. That's a type of IRA for employer sponsored for businesses. It's an employer sponsored plan. And existing businesses to establish a new simple plan for tax year 2024, October 1st. All right, October 15th, this is the deadline for C corporations and sole proprietorships who filed for tax extensions to establish and contribute to SEP and individual 401k plans for tax year 2023. Again, for those who filed for extensions. Taxpayers who filed an extension or filed their taxes timely must remove or recharacterize a 2023 contribution by this date. So again, filed an extension or filed their taxes timely, you can remove or characterize a 2023 contribution. Deadline for C corporations and sole proprietors who filed for an extension to make simple plan employer contributions for tax year 2023. And finally, October 31st, this is the date that IRA custodians and trustees must send out the document required to satisfy the simple plan notice requirements by this date. So that's our responsibility to send to any of our account holders who have a simple plan. We must send out the notice requirement to satisfy this notice requirement by October 31st. November 2nd. 60 days before the following plan year, businesses must provide notices to their employees about the type of contribution they will be making for tax year 2025. So if you have, if you're a business owner and you have employees and you're offering them a 401k or a SEP or a simple, November 2nd is the date you must provide notices about their contribution you'll be making for tax year 2025. November 15th, this is the date that IRA custodians and trustees must send fair market valuation notifications to all clients. So it's by the end of the second week in November to update their assets FMV. And note that it says here, accept publicly traded assets with openly available market prices. So For 97% of all account holders, this is not applicable to them because they have their account with a bank or brokerage firm, and those bank and brokerage firms are investing in publicly traded assets, so the account holders don't have to notify them. But self-directed custodians like Entrust, who are holding non-traditional assets, this is the date that we send, by which we send out a notification to all of our account holders informing them that they must update us with the with any changes in valuation of the assets they're holding in the accounts with us. Then finally, at the end of the year, December 31st, traditional IRA, SEP Simple, and individual 401k plan participants who are older than 73 must distribute their RMD by this date. So these are for people who have already taken their first RMD. This is now your next RMD, must be taken by the end of the year. Also, separate accounts, inherited IRAs, must be established by the state for each beneficiary of the IRA holders who died in 2023. So if you have a, if you're the beneficiary of an account of someone who passed in 2023, you have until the end of 2024 to establish either, if you're a spouse, the option to take it into your own account, or establish a beneficiary IRA for the person who passed. Okay, so let's get into some of the things associated with the SECURE Act. So contribution, hold on, sorry, I need to move a box out of the way here. So this is traditional and Roth contribution limits, the changes. So in 2023, you can contribute up to the age 50, $6,500. In 2024, that's now $7,000. If you're 50 or older, you can put in an additional $1,000. So total contribution now for 2023 is $7,500. For 2024, if you're 50 or older, is $8,000. This is the modified adjusted gross limits for those who are covered by an employer-sponsored plan and still want to make a contribution to a traditional IRA. So there are phase outs where once your modified adjusted gross income exceeds those limits, you can't make a tax deductible contribution to a traditional IRA. So for 2023, it started to phase out at 73,000 and then completely phased out at 83. For 2024, it's 77 and 87. If you're married filing a joint tax return, you can see the dollar amounts there, 116 to 136. It begins to phase out, then completely phased out at 136. 123 to 143 for 2024. Married filing separate tax returns at $0 to $10,000. It phases out once you're over $10,000, or phased out at over $10,000. And then if you're the spouse of an active participant, then it is 218 to 228, phased out at 228, 230 to 240 in 2024. Again, to clarify what this means is that if you are an employee and you're covered by an employer-sponsored plan and you want to make a tax-deductible contribution to a traditional IRA, so we saw the dollar amounts previously, the $6,500 this year, $7,000 next year, 50 or older, goes up by $1,000. You can't make that contribution as a tax deductible contribution if your income, if you fall into any of these brackets and your income exceeds those limits, or if it falls into the range, then you can make some tax deductible contribution, but it phases out. Okay, for Roth IRA contributions, there are phase outs again that once your income exceeds, you are not eligible to make a Roth contribution at all. So it begins for 2023 at 138. It starts to phase out at 153. You can't make a Roth IRA contribution if your income exceeds that. For 2024, it goes up to 146 to 161. Married filing a joint tax return, 218 to 228 in 2023, 230 to 240 in 2024. Then married filing separate tax returns, it phases out after $10,000. Again, if your income exceeds these, then you're not eligible to make a Roth IRA contribution for that year. Employer-sponsored plan contribution limits for simple IRAs. So if you're an employee of a company that's offering a simple IRA, Then you can, in 2023, you can contribute as much as 15.5, for 2024, as much as 16. If you're over 50, you can add an additional 3,500. So 50 or older, it goes up to, it's from 19,000 in 2023 and 19,500 in 2024. Again, you can contribute up to that amount if you're an employee working for a company that offers a simple IRA. So for a SEP IRA, SEP IRAs, the contributions are made by the company, by the employer. And so the employer contributes, the employee does not have the option to contribute to a SEP. The employer contribution is the lesser of 25% of the compensation, or no more than $66,000 for 2023. And then for 2024, it's $69,000 compensation limits. I'm actually not sure what that means, $650, I guess maybe that's the minimum. The maximum you have to make at least $650. Then maximum compensation cap, so if your compensation exceeds that 330 and 345, that's the maximum that can be contributed. That's the 66 or 9,000. The company can't contribute any more than that, even if you make more than that. For 401k plans, the employer contribution is $66,000 or $69,000 max. Again, it's 25% of income, not to exceed $66,000. So the company can't contribute. So if you make $100,000 with a company, the employer can't contribute more than $25,000. Then the employee deferral, the employee can put in $22,500 or $23,000 as long as you make at least that amount. Right. So you have to make at least 22.5 to contribute 22.5. And then 2024 is 23,000. And then 50 and older, you can contribute an additional $7,500 for each year. Pulse savings accounts, if you're single, 3850 in 2023, it's increased by 300 to 2024 to 4150. If you're part of if you have a family coverage, then it's 7750. In 2023, 8,050 in 24. And if you're 55 or older, you get to put in an additional $1,000 on top of that. And then for educational, Coverdell educational savings accounts, the contribution limits haven't changed. It's $2,000 per year until a child is 18 years old. Okay. Secure Act changes. So we're going to go over some of the primary changes that occurred with the Secure Act 2.0. I'm going to preface this. I'm not some kind of Secure Act expert, but this is what we perceive as to be sort of the main changes that you might want to be aware of. Excuse me. So the Secure Act, it passed in 2022. Went into effect in 2024, 8 items that you should understand. And so saving for retirement, I'm going to read something here. Saving for retirement can be so daunting that many people avoid thinking about it altogether. Now, a new federal retirement law is taking on some key issues that prevent people from putting money aside. The Secure Act, the Secure 2.0 Act, which became law at the end of 2022, is an attempt to help more people prepare for retirement, in part by making government incentive programs more forgiving to people who need help catching up on their savings. Here are the details about Secure 2.0 and some of the ways it might affect you. Okay, so automatic 401k enrollment, what does that mean? If your employer offers a retirement plan, such as a 401k or perhaps a 403b plan, you typically have to opt in to participate. Though some employers do provide automatic enrollment. So federal lawmakers have said that manual enrollment decreased participation for eligible employees, particularly Black, Latino, and lower wage workers. So for retirement plans starting after December 31st, 2024, this will no longer be the case. Instead, once employees are eligible, employers will automatically enroll them into a retirement savings plan. The initial contribution must be at least 3% pre-tax earnings, but not more than 10%. Once this provision takes effect, employees will have to opt out if they don't want to participate in their company's 401k or retirement plan. So again, this is not, It's automatically, if you work for a company and they offer a 401k, you're going to be opted in. They're going to start taking money out of your paycheck to contribute to it unless you specifically opt out. A new 401k employer contribution option. In the past, employees with a Roth 401k option typically had their employer contributions made into a separate pre-tax account, such as a traditional 401k. With Section 604 of the Secure Act 2.0, employees can now choose to have their employer contributions be made into the Roth account if it's offered by the employer. Not all 401k plans have a Roth option, so you're going to want to find out from your company if they have that option. This does not mean that the money will count as earned income, incurred taxes now, but qualified distributions in retirement similar to a Roth IRA will be tax-free. So in other words, if you select the Roth option, the money that will go into the account, you can now have the employer amount, the employer contribution go to the Roth option. Previously, only the employee option was allowed to go into the Roth portion. Now you can select to have the employer option go into the Roth. Required minimum distributions. Under the new Secure 2.0 Act, the rules and penalties around required minimum distributions also have changed. For people who turn 72 in or after 2023, the age for required minimum distributions has been raised from 72 to 73, and it will rise to 75 in 2033. However, people who turned 72 in 2022 were not affected and still need to take their first distribution by April 1st of 2023. So you would have had to have already taken it April 1st of this year. Additionally, the penalty for not taking required minimum distributions will decrease from to 25% from 50% starting in 2023. If corrected in time, the penalty will drop to 10%. Starting in 2024, required distributions will be eliminated altogether from non-IRA Roth accounts, including Roth 401k plans. So that's new. It was always Roth IRAs, never had a requirement of distributions. Roth 401ks did. That's going to go away. This means that, These changes mean people will now have even more time to grow their retirement funds. However, pushing back your retirement payouts comes with a caveat. Taking distributions from your traditional IRA later means you'll have to withdraw more funds in a shorter period of time, a decision that could be more expensive depending upon your tax rate at the time. So a conversation you want to have with a CPA. Catch-up contributions. With new provisions in the Secure Act 2.0, people 50 and older will have a few more options to catch up to their retirement goals. With catch-up contributions, the IRS allows older Americans to contribute more to their retirement funds beyond the annual limit. This could help make up for missed opportunities to save when you were younger. Starting in 2025, catch-up contribution limits for retirement plans such as 401ks and IRA accounts will increase from $7,500 per year to $10,000. The limit will be indexed for inflation. Again, those are for people who are 50 or older. For simple IRAs, the catch-up contribution limits will increase to $3,500 in 2023 compared with $3,000 in previous years. For 2024, the catch-up contribution limit remains $3,500. I think I showed you that earlier. All right, educational savings and loan debt. Parents saving for their children's college funds will have some new flexibility with their 529 plans. After 15 years, funds from the 529 plan can be rolled into a Roth IRA for the beneficiary. The amount contributed each year can't exceed the annual IRA contribution limit up to a lifetime. The amount contributed each year can't exceed the annual IRA contribution limit up to a lifetime limit of $35,000. People with student loans can take advantage of a new incentive under Secure 2.0 Act to balance savings for retirement and repaying student debt loans instead of choosing one or the other. Starting in 2024, when you make a qualified student loan repayment, your employer may match that amount into your 401k plan, 403b plan, or simple IRA. The Savers Tax Credit. The Secure 2.0 Act includes changes to the Savers Tax Credit intended to help lower income earners get an extra boost toward their retirement savings. When contributions are made into a retirement account, the federal government will match that contribution instead of giving an immediate tax break. While this means you won't receive the tax break, it also could potentially result in more retirement savings. Okay, changes to hardship withdrawals. One drawback of savings for retirement can be that you typically can't touch the funds until retirement age without incurring hefty penalties and a 10% early distribution tax. In 2024, account holders will be able to withdraw from their 401k plans or IRAs for emergency expenses without these consequences. Only one distribution of up to $1,000 per year is allowed, and the funds must be repaid within 3 years. If the funds haven't been repaid within the three-year period, no additional hardship withdrawals can be made. And then finally, emergency savings. Building an emergency fund is crucial to ensuring you can take care of any surprise expenses. But between daily living expenses and the added responsibility of saving for retirement, it can be hard to get started. Beginning in 2024, employers that provide a defined contribution retirement plan. So a defined contribution plan is a 401k, a SEP IRA, simple, et cetera. So employers that provide a defined contribution retirement plan may also offer a pension-linked emergency savings account for employees who are not highly compensated, with employees automatically opted in at up to 3% of their salary. The balance of the account is capped at $2,500 or lower depending upon employer guidelines, and contributions can stop or be directed to a Roth defined contribution plan if available until the balance drops below the cap. The first four withdrawals from this account aren't subject to fees or charges, and after employees leave the company, they can choose to take the funds in cash or roll those funds into a Roth defined contribution plan or IRA. Okay, so to summarize, for 2024, we gave you the dates, mark your calendars. You're going to get emailed a link to this presentation that if you have any dates that you didn't mark down or don't remember, you'll have the opportunity to see the presentation once we send you the link and go find it. Know your limits and stay updated on the laws. Your limits in terms of what you can contribute. And then and stay updated on the Secure 2.0 Act. Upcoming webinar in 2024. So next month, we're going to have top disruptive real estate trends in 2024. This is going to be with Neil Bawa, who has been an annual presenter for us for I don't even know how many years now. But if you are interested in real estate, what's going on in real estate, he provides a highly entertaining and informative presentation. Want to learn something new? We have a survey. Please let us know. If you need any more information on our self-directed IRAs, please go to our website, theuntrustgroup.com, and check out our learning center. And then also feel free to follow us on social media. Okay, I'm going to take myself off camera or on camera here, and then I'll read the questions here. Give me 1 second. To start. All right. So the first one says, how can I transfer a real estate asset to a traditional investment, to a traditional IRA? I'm thinking you're mean to a traditional IRA. Sorry. So if you're asking, can you transfer a real estate asset that you own personally to a traditional IRA? You can't. That's not allowed. If you're asking how you can transfer from one IRA custodian to another IRA custodian, you just have to complete the transfer form of the custodian that is receiving the transfer. And then we will send that, assuming you're transferring to Entrust, we'll send that transfer request over to your current custodian. And then they will send us paperwork, and then you'll have to go to your local municipality to change title on that property. Again, just want to clarify, you say, how can I transfer a real estate asset to a traditional investment? The phrasing on this, As now that I read it, you might be asking how you can transfer a real estate asset that's owned by your IRA to a traditional, like in your personal name. You'd have to take that asset as a distribution. So, Sherry, if you want to clarify your question a little bit, I try to cover all the bases, but the way you phrase the question is not entirely clear. Does the IRS do anything else besides RMD math with the FMV for the IRAs? Does the IRS do anything else besides RMD math with the fair market valuation? Well, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they probably, the government, I don't know necessarily for the IRS, but the government, I think that value of retirement accounts, and it goes into general like government reporting in terms of what's going on in our market, right? What's happening with gross domestic product and how the economy is flowing. I think that that probably gets reflected in some reporting, but the IRS specifically, with the FMV, no, I don't think they do anything other than it gets used for R&D purposes, but I don't speak for the IRS. So I'm speculating. I don't really know for sure. Can a portion of an inherited IRA be converted to a Roth IRA? Sure. If you want to, so you have an inherited IRA. All right, so I'm going to qualify this. If depending upon what beneficiary you are, if you are a non-spouse beneficiary, then you have to establish what's called a beneficiary IRA, and then you have up to 10 years to have that account, that asset distributed to you. I don't think that you can convert that to a Roth IRA, but I have to be honest, I'm not sure. If you're a spouse beneficiary, you can take that into your own account. So assuming they had a traditional IRA, you can take that into your own traditional IRA. And then once it's in your traditional IRA, you can then convert that to a Roth IRA if you choose. Okay, so spouses have the option of taking the asset into their own account. Once it's in your own account, you can convert. For beneficiary IRAs, I'm not sure you have to take it for, I'm sorry, for non-spouse beneficiaries, you have to put it in a beneficiary IRA. I don't think that you can convert a beneficiary IRA to a Roth, but you might want to either Google that or talk to a CPA. But my guess is the answer to that is no. Is there an upper age limit for making traditional IRA contributions? No. As long as you have earned income, then you can make traditional IRA contributions, but you do have to have earned income, right? So passive income, investment income, Social Security, those don't count as earned income. You have to have earned income, W-2, W-9, it has to come from a job. If there is no change in the FMV of some of my Roth IRA assets, do I need to file FMV with NTrust for that year? You do not. We actually put out a video on, you know, filing or reporting the FMV, and we specifically stated on there, if you have no change, you don't have to do anything. Is there a required minimum distributions for Roth IRAs or just traditional IRAs? There is no required minimum distribution for Roth IRAs. Now, there is a requirement distribution not just for traditional IRAs, also SEPs, simples, but no, not for Roth IRAs. Does income earned by my Roth IRA figure into my qualifying income range? Well, so it's not called income that your Roth IRA is earning. It's return on investment. So you're growing your Roth IRA. So no, that doesn't go into your qualifying income, right? So qualifying income comes from earnings, from career, I guess, job related earnings. No. Your Roth IRA, again, it's not income. It's return on investment. It's dividend. It's growth. Can a Roth IRA be rolled over directly more than once a year? So you use the term rollover. So my answer to that is no, it can't be rolled over more than once a year, but it can be transferred more than once a year. So doing an IRA to IRA transfer or a trustee to trustee transfer, there is no limitation on how many of those that you want to do a year. There is a limitation on doing IRA to IRA rollovers. So there's a little bit of a difference in paperwork associated with the two. So you just want to make sure that if you want to move money from one IRA to another IRA, whether it's a Roth to Roth or traditional, make sure you process it as a transfer, not as a rollover. Do we need to provide an FMV if we are not planning to take a distribution? Okay, so the IRS is requiring you to provide us with an updated fair market valuation. So the expectation is that your custodian is keeping the fair market valuation of your asset updated to the most current valuation. And for companies like Entrust, we rely on you to provide us that fair market valuation. So yes, if you had a valuation change in your asset, even if you're not taking distribution, it is expected that you continue to provide that fair market valuation update. Did Secure 2.0 change anything regarding RMDs for inherited IRAs? Look, I read you the things that we highlighted. If it wasn't in the eight things that we talked about, then that would be a question I would suggest you Google or talk to a CPA, because I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. Again, unless it was, I'd have to go back and look at the eight things if we talked about RMDs for inherited IRAs. Actually, we didn't talk about that. I don't think so. I think it's still the within 10-year thing. But now that I think about it, I mean, I'm sure we would have highlighted it if it was a change. So my answer to that is almost certainly no, that it's still, you have to take it within 10 years. But I'm gonna again qualify that to say you might want to just do a quick Google search or talk to your CPA about that. What is the difference between asset type on the FMV form between real estate and private equity? I have two properties, each in their own account and their own LLC. It has always been reported on FMV as real estate, but this year Entrust requests a change to private equity. Why? Okay, so your IRA owns an LLC, the LLC owns the real estate. So it's always been private equity with us. For us, real estate is when your IRA holds actual title on the property. In your case, the IRA is the owner of an LLC. It's the member of the LLC, and the LLC holds the real estate. So you say it has always been reported on FMV as real estate. I mean, if that's the case, then we were just overlooking the fact that you were saying in error what it actually is, because an LLC, by definition, is a corporation. It's a limited liability corporation. It's not real estate. Again, for us, real estate is actual title on real estate. Your IRA has the title to the real estate. In this case, your LLC has title to the real estate. The IRA owns the LLC. The LLC is private equity. Does Entrust calculate RMDs at age 73? If you need the calculation for your RMD for your Entrust account, then you can reach out to us and we can go into our trust accounting system and it'll tell us what the RMD is. So it's contained within our system that we use, the software that we use to keep all of the accounts. So if you want to know what your RMD is, you can just reach out to us and we'll look it up and give it to you. You can also look up actuarial tables and just it'll give you the percentage and just multiply that percentage by the valuation of your account and get your RMD. If my self-directed IRA with Entrust has checkbook control in an LLC, do you need fair market valuation for each asset in the LLC or just the dollar value for the total value of the LLC? Good question. We just need the LLC. We don't need each asset. Now, obviously, the valuation of the LLC is the valuation of every asset under it, right? But no, we don't need you to list each individual asset. We just need the total value of the LLC. Is there any valuation requirement for real estate held in a Roth IRA when attaining age 73? I mean, we have to file a Form 5498 reporting the fair market value of your accounts with us. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the IRS expects custodians like Entrust to report an updated and current fair market value. So as long as you have an account, and as long as you have assets in that account that have value, then the expectation is, and if that asset is not, not available on the public market, like a stock bond, mutual fund, et cetera, that you would get with most banks or brokerage firms, then you are required to report an updated fair market value to the IRA, to the custodian, so that the custodian can report that to the IRS. I have had a Roth IRA for 10 years with lots of various contributions every year. I'm 70. What rules do I have for Roth withdrawals? Really, at this point, you're not under any rules. Like the rules for a Roth IRA withdrawal is you have to have a Roth for at least 5 years and be over age 59 and a half in order to avoid any tax consequences. So at that point, you've had it for over 10 years. You're over 59 and a half. You can withdraw the entire account and you're not subject to any tax. You can withdraw part of it. You're not subject to any tax. At this point, you're free to do what you want with that account in terms of taking withdrawals, and you have no tax consequences associated with it. I'm going to add, I'm confident of those rules, but you should always maybe talk to a CPA before you start taking any withdrawals, or an advisor if you know it's the right time for you to take withdrawals. But you're free to do that. You're free to do that without any tax consequences. Congratulations. Do you have any suggestions for a CPA tax advisor in California, preferably who specializes in self-directed IRAs? No, I'm really sorry, I don't. You have my contact information on there. I guess I know one person who here in the Bay Area who has referred account holders to us. So he understands self-directed IRAs, which not all CPAs do. So if you reach out to me directly, I'll give you his contact info. Excuse me. But I'm not saying I don't know that he specializes in self-directed IRAs. I wouldn't say that. I just know that he understands them. Can a precious metal simple IRA be converted to a Roth IRA? Sure. Yeah. RMD as a beneficiary of IRA is based on life expectancy, not 10 years. RMD as beneficiary of IRA is based on life. Okay. So my understanding is the Secure Act changed that to it's 10 years. Now, if you're the beneficiary of an account prior to the changes in the Secure Act, then you would still be falling under the life expectancy. But for people who are beneficiaries, once the Secure Act went into place, it changed to 10 years. That's my understanding. If you're a CPA and you know differently than me, then I'll default to you, but I'm pretty sure that what I'm saying is correct. Do I have to give my custodian a fair market value for each property I have in my Roth account? Does a realtor need to do the FMV? So if you are holding multiple different properties in your IRA, then yes, you would need to give a fair market valuation for each property. If you're holding them under an LLC, then you only have to give the FMV for the LLC. For us, and I don't know that you have an account with NTrust specifically, but I will tell you what our rules are for an FMV. You have multiple different ways that you can update us with a fair market valuation. You can have a realtor do a comparative market analysis, and provide that as the FM supporting documentation for the FMV, or you can have a realtor sign off on our fair market valuation form. You can also provide other types of supporting documentation that doesn't involve a realtor. For example, your property tax assessment would have a valuation on that. You can use that. If you have an appraisal, obviously that would work, although we don't require an appraisal. For us, when you look up our fair market valuation form, we have instructions that include very specific things that we would need in order to update the property, the fair market valuation of your property, which can include a realtor doing a comparative market analysis or signing off on the fair market valuation form. But there are other options besides that. Sorry. For self-directed IRAs, do I need to form an LLC to get check writing abilities? Yes. If you want to be able to have checkbook control over your IRA, the way to do that is to structure it through an LLC where your IRA owns the LLC, but you can name yourself as the manager of the LLC. As manager of the LLC, you set up the bank account, you become the signatory on behalf of the LLC, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, that would be a requirement. Is there an upper wage limit for making traditional IRA contributions? Only if you are covered by an employer-sponsored plan. If you are not covered by an employer-sponsored plan, then no, there is no upper wage limit. You can make traditional IRA contributions, whatever dollar amount that you make. Of course, there's limitations on how much you can contribute to a traditional IRA, and we talked about that. It's $7,500, I think, in 2024. But if you're covered by an employer-sponsored plan, then there are wage limits. Is there an upper age for limit for making Roth IRA contributions? There absolutely are, and we went over them on one of the slides. How would I make a purchase of a non-traditional asset like real estate using funds in my IRA? You would open a self-directed IRA. You would fund that self-directed IRA. You would transfer a rollover money from your current custodian to your self-directed IRA. And then you would instruct your custodian to make the investment you want to make. And the paperwork would have to be submitted in the name of your IRA as the investor to the custodian. So for example, if you were going to buy real estate, then the name of the investor with us would be the Untrust Group, FBO, your name and account number. FBO stands for For Benefit Of. So the purchase contract, the closing documents, all have to be submitted to the custodian to Untrust for processing and signature. We are the signatory on behalf of the IRA. So you would get that contract and it would show the Untrust Group, FBO, your name and account number as the investor. All the closing documents would show the Untrust Group, FBO, your name and account number as the investor. All that has to be submitted to the custodian. And then the custodian sends the money directly to the seller, to escrow, wherever. Not to you. We don't send the money to you when you go buy the property. You instruct us to buy the property and we buy through your IRA. Private equity, for example, if you're investing in a startup company or a hedge fund or something, that would be the subscription agreement. If you are doing notes, if you're going to use your IRA and lend money, it would be the note. The promissory note would get submitted to the custodian in the name of the IRA as the lender, right? On the private equity, the IRA would be listed as the investor, right? So paperwork goes to the custodian in the name of the IRA. The IRA custodian sends the money directly to the seller of the asset, whether it's a company or a borrower or a seller of a property, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, what is the process if I wanted to get the asset out of an IRA and make it an unencumbered traditional asset? The asset is owned 100% by the IRA and has no liens or loans. You just have to request it be distributed to you. So the only way to take a property and have it go to you personally is to request it as a distribution. And then we would distribute the asset out. We would report to the IRS that we distributed that at whatever the current fair market value is. And then it would be up to you to then change titling on that asset. So if you have property that's owned by your IRA, the Untrust Group, FBO, your name and account number, you'd now have to go and change title to be have it held under your personal name. If you're investing in a startup company or hedge fund or something, and we distribute that asset to you, then you would have to go to that company and tell them to change who owns that property or that asset, that company investment or fund from the Untrust Group, FBO, et cetera, to your personal name. So in short, just fill out a distribution form and request that you want the asset distributed to you in kind, and we will file that. We will distribute it to you and report that on a 1099 to the IRS. If it's a Roth IRA, then it becomes a non-taxable distribution. All right. Could I recharacterize in 2024 IRA contributions for 2022 where the taxes were paid? There was no Roth IRA option allowed. Okay, this is one of those questions I'm going to defer to a CPA. Talk to a CPA about that. I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry, I'm not going to speculate. For FMV of real estate, do you have to get an appraisal every year? No, you don't ever have to get appraisal. You have to provide us some supporting documentation. And I mentioned this in an earlier answer. You can have a comparative market analysis done by a real estate agent. You can provide a tax bill, tax assessment. But no, you don't have to get an appraisal at all if you don't want to. Now, if you're going to take a property as a distribution, if you're going to convert it to a Roth, like certain things, we require an appraisal. But to just update the fair market valuation, no, you don't have to get an appraisal. I transferred my traditional IRA to a self-directed IRA in October, but haven't invested as of today. Do I need to file FMV? No. If you just have cash in the account, you don't have to do an FMV. What are the considerations for converting a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA? How is this taxed? Well, it's taxed as earned income at whatever the valuation is that you convert, whatever the amount is that you convert. So if you make $100,000 and you convert $50,000, then at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, you're going to have, prior to taking any deductions, $150,000 of income that you're going to have to report and pay taxes on. What are the considerations for converting traditional IRA to Roth IRA? consider the tax consequences of it. Talk to a CPA about whether it's a good idea to make a, if this is a good time to make a conversion for you. When someone takes a required distribution of an inherited IRA within 10 years, do they have to pay taxes on it? Someone takes a required distribution of an inherited Roth IRA within 10 years, they have to pay taxes on it. I don't think so because it was a Roth IRA, but I am also not sure about the answer to that, to be honest with you. So I am, again, going to defer to maybe like just Googling that exact question. When someone takes a required distribution of an inherited Roth IRA within 10 years, they have to pay tax on it. Google that, see what comes up. Better yet, talk to a CPA. I am 79 years old with a Roth IRA for over 20 years. I'm still making contributions to it. Sometimes I also take distributions from it. Is there any age limit where either of these transactions must cease? No, not that I know of. As long as you have earned income and it doesn't exceed the contribution limits, you can contribute to a Roth IRA. You can also, like, Roth IRAs are not subject to RMDs, so you can choose to take withdrawals or not take withdrawals. That's my understanding. You might want to verify that with a CPA, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. Do you have a CPA that understands self-direct IRAs list for other areas like Florida? Big problem finding them. I have a colleague, Rachel, who is, you know, she's our business. I'm a business development manager. She's my colleague, business development manager. She's based out of Florida. She might. So if you want to, again, if you're looking at the screen, if you want to send me an email and ask that question, I will forward it to Rachel to respond to. I don't know of anyone, but again, she might. My dream is to do a full disbursement at age 73 and end the two LLC and trust accounts. Is Entrust able to tell me what the taxes would be to do this? No. It depends upon what tax bracket you fall in at the time. I don't know what age you're what age you are now. So, I mean, when you turn age 73, we don't even know what the tax brackets are going to be and what, you know, tax brackets you'll fall in based on other income that you might have, or what the valuation of your LLCs might be at the time that you turn 73. So no, we have no way of knowing that. Did I hear right that the property tax bill can be used to report fair market valuation? Note that he is in California. Tax assessment may be different from current property value. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, if you think that the property tax bill doesn't have an accurate assessment of the valuation, then don't use it. But it's one of the documents that we will accept as supporting documentation to change the fair market value. But note that it's ultimately the IRS that needs the correct fair market valuation. So if you think that that property tax bill, the property tax assessment has an inaccurate dollar amount and you're using that, and particularly if you're subject to RMD and you're using that for a lower RMD, and the IRS, let's say, felt that you were reporting an incorrect valuation and avoiding a higher RMD requirement, then they might have a problem with that and you might be subject to penalties. So, you know, use your discretion on what you provide us to update us with your fair market valuation. But I'm telling you that we will accept that as supporting documentation to allow you to change the fair market valuation. But again, I'm going to emphasize this. It's your responsibility to keep an updated fair market valuation, not ours. Why would someone not want to have checkbook control of their self-directed IRA? It seems much easier, faster, and cheaper. Well, cheaper is debatable. When you have an LLC, you typically have to pay the state in which you set up that LLC an annual fee. So you also, if you're not capable of setting up an LLC, you might have to pay someone to create the LLC and set up the operating agreement that can cost up to $1,000, right? So depending upon your ability to do that, you also, with an LLC, are now subject to record keeping requirements. It can become easier to do something that's prohibited if you have an LLC. For example, if you have an LLC and you send money from the LLC to a disqualified person like yourself, you've now created a prohibited transaction that puts your entire IRA at risk. So it does provide, it does give you more responsibility to make sure that you don't do things that are prohibited. Whereas if you have the IRA held directly by the custodian, or I'm sorry, have the asset like a property held directly by the custodian, and you ask us to, I don't know, send money to yourself, well, we're going to tell you, like, to pay a bill, we'll tell you we can't do that. That becomes a distribution and you're going to be taxed on that, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll, or at least if you want that, if you want the money sent to you as a distribution, it'll be handled with proper paperwork and filed properly with the IRS. If you take the money directly from the LLC because you want a distribution, you've done it improperly. The money has to go from the LLC back to the IRA, and then you take the distribution from the IRA. If you don't follow those procedures, again, you've created a privity transaction and put your IRA at risk. So it's not everything is the best for everybody, right? Like, it may be best for you, it might be faster, easier, and cheaper for you, but that doesn't necessarily apply to everybody. Do you have interest services or know about accounting firms that are experienced in unrelated business income tax? I don't. No, we don't. I don't. We don't know anyone specifically that are experienced in doing unrelated business income tax. I'm sorry. And we don't provide that service. How do I fund a real estate note with funds from a self-directed IRA and also from a self-directed, so husband and wife? Oh, and a self-directed health savings account. So what you're asking is called partnering your accounts. And so if you have a note, then you just have to list the husband's IRA as an investor at whatever percent his account will be lending the money, and your HSA at whatever percent your HSA is going to be lending the money. So on the note agreement, it would show the interest group, FBO, your husband's name and account number for whatever percent is going to be lent from his account of the total, and then the interest group, FBO, your name and account number at whatever percent your HSA would be lending. So it's called partnering your IRA. You're allowed to do it. You just have to have each account listed as separate investors, separate lenders on the agreement. If you own a self-directed LLC with its own bank account, do I need to report the assets that are purchased yearly or just the FMV? Just the FMV. We only need the FMV. How do you get a property out of an LLC? Would this be better to do before taking a full distribution? Well, if you're talking about selling the property, then you would just sell it, right? But if you're talking about, so get property out of an LLC, you can re-register the asset back to the IRA. If you don't want to have the LLC anymore, but you still want to continue to have the property owned in your IRA, then you would just have you would do our form called a bi-direction letter and process what's called an exchange. You exchange out the asset from the LLC back to the IRA, and then report that. Do like get the title changed with the local municipality to be held directly by your IRA, no longer through the LLC, and then you could close out the LLC. Or actually, by doing that, the LLC would close out. Or submit the paperwork to us to close out the LLC. But again, if you're talking about get the property out, if you want to just sell it, then just sell it and then put the cash from the LLC back to the IRA and then close out the LLC. So I have a feeling your first question was get the property out. I think I'm thinking I answered your question in terms of getting it from the LLC back to the IRA. So again, you just have to re-register the asset with the local municipality to change title on who owns it from the LLC to the IRA. Send us the recorded deed and we'll take ownership of the property in the IRA and you can close out the LLC. It's paperwork. It's paperwork with us. I don't know if you have your account with us, but when it comes time, if you want to do that, just let your business development manager and their, whether it's me or one of my colleagues and their associate know, and they'll help you get everything done. Why does the IRS need fair market valuation? What do they do with this information? There's RMD uses for it, I'm sure, in terms of other stuff. Like, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. You'd have to ask the IRS. Okay, that was it. Those were all the questions. Thanks everybody for joining us. And really, I can't encourage you enough to join our webinar next month to hear Neil. If you're a real estate investor or interested in hearing what's going on in the real estate market, his thing is always excellent. So thanks again, and hope to see you guys at the webinar. Let us know if you have any questions or need any information. Thanks.